All set.
I am on.
Yep, all set.
Okay. Call the meeting to order.
I'm getting a feedback from the Zoom, so one second.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Okay. It is horrible. Okay, let's give this a try. Welcome, everyone. Can we introduce each other? I'm Hannah Tyler. I will try to share. State your name and who you represent. Thank you.
I have a suggestion.
Go ahead.
Hannah, can you mute the Zoom or your audio on the Zoom if you have both? I think if you have both Zoom and the conference call, they're echoing off of each other. Like you're getting the audio from the computer into the phone or something like that. So there should be, I think, on the bottom left of your screen, it might be like a microphone. I think if you just mute yourself on there. Or you can maybe just turn off the sound on your computer on that end. You should still hear through the phone, so you shouldn't need to have both.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to bring the volume all the way down, but I'm not able to mute it
off. Sometimes you can hit like F1 or something for your volume to mute it completely. But I think it is getting better that you've lowered the volume. I think that it's helped.
See, I'm using the iPad, and I don't see anywhere where I'm able to.
You should be able to just hit the volume button down until it turns all the way off.
Right. I have it all the way down. I'm holding it down, hoping it would mute, but it's not. Okay, you know, I could just turn off the Zoom then.
Well, right now it's fine. Right now there's no feedback.
Oh my goodness.
So let's continue with who we have. Maybe, this is Brian speaking, maybe it would be easier if I go down the list of who I have so that our captioner can verify. So I'm going to call out names, and if you are on the conference call line or on Zoom, please acknowledge through either, and the interpreters will let us know if someone on Zoom has responded. So Barbara Clunan, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Okay. Lisa Flaherty Vaughn, are you on Zoom?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Jesse Sam, are you on Zoom?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
Do we have Bill Fowler or Christine Granitek from Oak Hill? Do we have either of them on the phone? We do not. Do we have Heidi Hanier on Zoom?
Yes, this is Heidi. I'm here on Zoom. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so we do have Heidi. Do we have Mary Johns on the phone?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Do we have Crystal Kelly on the phone?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Do we have Eric Crangle on Zoom.
Yes, hi, this is Eric. I'm here.
Okay. Do we have Chris Lassen on the phone?
Yes, Chris is here. And and Margie Santos is, I believe, on, replacing Marsh Brown.
Okay. Well, we'll call for others after as soon as we get the roster of members. Do we have Sandy Miles on the phone?
This is Sandy Miles.
Kathy, do we have Kathy Morgan on the phone?
Yes, this is Kathy Morgan.
Thank you. Do we have Emily Morganti on the phone? Okay, we do not. Do we have Karen Olson on the phone?
Brian, excuse me, I think Emily retired.
That could be the reason she's not. Well, she represents us as a... He represents as a parent, but that, thank you for that. Karen Olson, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. And Tara Brown Ogilvie, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Alan Sylvester, are you on the phone?
Yes, this is Al on the phone.
Okay. Okay. And Hannah Tyler, are you on the phone?
I am on the phone. I also have Zoom, but I cannot, I don't know why my visual is not on.
Okay. And additionally, I know that the following individuals have identified themselves as being on the phone, and I just want to verify. Muriel Apero, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Margie Santos, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay. So let me work my way up and make sure I didn't miss anybody. And then what I'll do is we can kind of, at that point, ask if anybody else is on the phone. Okay, so let me just work my way up this list. Bear with me one moment. I know she wouldn't be on. I have now gone through, I've scrolled through the whole list, so at this point, if anybody else is on Zoom who has not yet been identified, could you please identify yourself now? And talk slow, and we may need to, we may need to have repeat. But is there anyone else who is on Zoom who has not yet been identified?
Hi, this is Sue Pedersen. I am from CAN, Connecticut Advocacy Network.
Okay. Is there anybody else on Zoom?
Yes.
Who? Okay, we need your name.
One moment.
Okay.
Hi, this is Brenda Moore. I'm from Massachusetts.
Okay. Is there anybody else on Zoom?
One moment. Oh. Hi, everybody. My name is Jason Corning. From where? Hold on one moment.
Maryland, Maryland, and happy to join the call today.
Okay. Is there anybody else on Zoom?
One moment, Brian, we're checking. Hi, I am Pat Clark. I'm from Source Interpreting. I'm also on Zoom.
Okay. Does that conclude everyone who is on Zoom?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Now, there are some additional folks on the telephone. Probably we're just going to do the best we can to speak one at a time. If your name hasn't been called, first off, I do know one other name. Alan Gunsberg, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Just so everybody knows, Alan is the most recent past chair of our state rehabilitation council. So I want to acknowledge and thank Alan for joining in as a participant today. Is there anybody else who is on the phone whose name has not yet been identified?
Andrew Norton.
Okay.
Tracy Evans Lucelli.
I'm sorry, Tracy, I thought I called you. Okay. But Andrew Norton is on the phone. Is there anybody else?
Lisa Tangway, secretary to Mr. Sigmund.
Okay. Is that everybody? All right, Hannah, we have now gotten through the actual attendance. You clearly have a quorum, so you may take the agenda. I guess your first item under old business is the approval of the January 28, 2020 minute.
Correct. We have all our introductions. Let's take a couple minutes to review the minutes from January 28, and then we will continue. So let's take a couple of minutes to review.
That when you're about to call for a vote, because these minutes did go out from Lisa, so probably folks have had a chance to review it. When you take the motion and the second, give the folks on Zoom the opportunity if either interpreter needs to let you know if one of them is making a motion or a second. So we'll just have to do like a bit of a pause, but you can probably at this point call for a motion.
Okay, so we call for a motion. All approve. Perhaps they could put their hands up to the ear as yes.
So is anybody making a motion yet to approve the minutes of January?
Okay.
This is Kathy Morgan. I make the motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, is there you need a second?
Barbara Coon is seconding.
Barb, okay.
Seconded, and Eric Anderson Kringle is also seconded.
There we go. Hello, this is Al. I have a change of the minutes, please.
Al and what?
This is Al. I have a change to the minutes, please.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Could you please remove that section where we talk about how I should be addressed? That's fine for a transcript, but it really doesn't belong in the minutes.
I'm calling them up on the screen, Alan. Yeah.
It's right near the beginning, and it obviously hasn't worked.
Approval of minutes. It must be under approved. All right, so you want to make a modification to the minutes where we would delete the sentence that says change Mr. Sylvester's first name from Alan to Al. You want to
Please.
Okay, so that is an amendment to the minutes, and therefore Kathy and Barbara, the motion and the second, are you okay with that?
Yes.
Barbara, yes.
Only the person who makes the motion has to agree to it. The person who seconds it's not really relevant.
Okay.
Not to disparage the person who seconded it, but it's only the maker of the motion who has to agree to the amendment.
Okay.
This
so
is Kathy Morgan.
Okay.
Kathy Morgan.
I approve the change for the minutes from the October 22nd meeting.
Mm-hmm.
This is 28 January.
No, this is January 28th minutes.
She's in, just to clarify, this is Brian. She's in the section of the January minute that talks about the approval from the October 22nd
I see.
Minute.
Okay.
So she's
oh,
actually
really? Okay.
She's actually
okay.
Correct. Okay, Hanna, I guess you can call for your vote.
Okay. All in favor, put your hands up on Zoom and say aye.
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 All right. Anyone who abstains?
Some of the participants on Zoom are still looking at the minutes to find the amendment that was requested. Please give us a moment.
All right.
This is Brian. For one of the interpreters, the amended section is at the very top where it mentions the October minutes being approved.
Yes.
That's where.
Yes. Yes, Brian. We have that. It just takes a moment for them to get their vision away from the computer and onto the paper that they're looking at,
okay.
And then to look back up to the computer to see the interpreter. So it takes just
okay.
A little extra time for
no,
their vision.
That's fine.
Thank you. Okay, Brian, if I am understanding everyone correctly, everyone on Zoom has raised their hand in support of approving the minutes.
Okay, great. Anyone against, abstained? Okay, we can move on. Everyone? Okay with that? All right.
Yes.
Okay, the next thing, we will go to updating on 2020 funding utilization.
This is Brian. Chris Lassen is going to give the report. So, Chris, unmute.
Right. I'm unmuted. Thank you. If you would refer to the Deafblind Advisory Committee, or DBAC, expenditure report dated June 1, 2020, that was distributed. I will summarize the utilization of funds through the beginning of this month. First off, I'll list the three organizational vendors. Oak Hill had a contract amount for community inclusion of $44,897. They expended $577, or just over 30% of the funds allocated, and serve 11 of 32 total clients. Second, CAN, the Communication Advocacy Network, had a budget of $141,353. They expended $72,271, or just over 51% of the allocation, and served 17 of 17 eligible clients. Third, UCP, or United Cerebral Palsy of Eastern Connecticut, had $9,999 to serve one client and expended $6,530, or just over 65%. Then there were four individuals served through purchase of service contracts. Client JH was allocated $7,055, $1,089 was expended, which is just over 15%. Then client AJ had an allocation of $9,987. Expenditures were $7,191, or 72%. Client JS was allocated $2,536 and $1,663 were expended, or just under 66%. And client JR had $9,999, and through June 1, $9,980 were expended, or just under 100%. The total expenditures for community inclusion services were $112,000, and out of $125,000, or just under 50%, and that represented 33 of 54 eligible clients getting services. Are there any questions about those figures at this point? In addition, there were 17,459 in additional expenditures, a little bit over 4,000 for ASL interpreters, $1,193 for rehab technology purchases, $11,469 for Braille instruction, and $784 for adaptive devices in the form of environmental notification system. So the total expenditures from the total amount of $265,269 were $129,760, or 49% of the amount available. That's the end of the update.
Ada.
Okay. Thank you, Chris, for that update. Now let's go on to 2C, update on deafblind technology program.
This is Barbara. I was wondering, could we ask a question regarding something on this list now, or should we wait?
We certainly can, sure.
On the Oak Hill contract, I was wondering, does that include camp?
No.
Or is that usually paid in June?
So there were 18,000, there was a set aside of $18,000 for camp that is normally paid in June, and that amount was not included.
Thank you.
This is Kathy Morgan. I'm looking at the total numbers. So the total numbers for the year expended was less than 50%, correct?
Just under 50%.
But then my question is, because of the status of the world, I'm sure this is affected by the COVID-19. So the other 50% go back to the state, or can it be held into a layover fund once we get through this? Thank you.
This is Brian speaking. Under the COVID-19 update on the agenda item is where I was going to actually be talking about some of the things that are related to these funds. Chairperson Tyler, with your permission, I'd like to defer my response to that section of the agenda.
Yes,
this is Kathy, thank you.
Muriel, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Yep. Okay, so we're all set with questions?
Oh, okay. We're all set. No more questions. We can go on to the technology program.
Okay, this is Muriel Apero, and I run the Connecticut Tech Act Project Deafblind Technology Program. For quarter three, which is January 1st through March 31st, we have suspended services right now, started in March due to COVID-19 services. But during that time, I have still processed applications. I'm happy to say we have two individuals that have been approved. So as soon as we can resume services, we already have them ready to be evaluated and move on with their applications. During that time, we were able to still send out 5 devices. They were still purchased. We spent $386.20 on eligibility of the consumers. We spent $5,465.06 for equipment. I'm sorry, I didn't give you the year-to-date on eligibility, which was $2,528.58. And the total year-to-date for equipment is $13,269.88. For installation and training of the consumers, we spent $2,122.73 for quarter three. Also, for the year-to-date on installation and training is $6,423.51. For outreach, we only spent $53.27, and that's also due to COVID-19, because at this point in time, we can't go to any fairs or anything like that to be a presence in that to send, you know, tell people about our services. So year to date, we've only spent $520. For administrative costs, that's for me to run the program, for Arlene to run the program, for us to get paperwork and all the outreach things done, and the administrative cost was $1,731.27. That's also like ordering equipment and things for the consumers. Total spent in quarter three was $28,000. Total spent so far with the grant, I should say, to year to date is $28,399. Now, in the last month, we've reallocated $70,000 back to the FCC. That's because our spending is way down, obviously, because of COVID. We are trying to figure out some ways to get things done once we resume. They have given us permission to purchase some safety equipment, sanitation equipment, so we can be prepared to go back and meet with the consumers in their homes. So masks, things like that. They are giving us the opportunity to send in a request, and everything will be either approved or denied, but at this point most of it is being approved so that we can move forward. Other than that, we are holding steady and trying to come up with ways to be able to start services back. We are mailing anybody who is returning to the program who has been part of the program before, and we've evaluated them. Some of those consumers are receiving additional equipment that's being mailed directly to their home, and if they have a family member, to assist them in connecting it, then that's great. If not, we're trying where the evaluators give the individual a call to try to talk them through setting it up. So that's about where we stand right now.
Well, thank you, Muriel. I do want to say it is a fabulous program. I'm one of the recipients.
Okay.
And the one thing I would like to suggest is, I know this is my second one, when someone does get an iPad to assist, I'd like to say call on the individual, because after so many years, they need to be updated. I know my older iPad could not be updated. It was limited, and then I was not able to utilize certain apps. So I don't know if the individuals who do have it, you know, they might be running into that problem. So you only have a time lapse, like say 3 years, or I'm not quite sure, but they are limited, and at some point you cannot even utilize them. So they need to get another or a newer version.
I'm glad you stated that, Hannah, because yes, I try to see every 3 years to reach out to
okay.
individuals
okay.
that have received our equipment previously. It doesn't always right. work, but
okay.
we definitely welcome anybody to reach out to us and say, hey, you know, I need to have something, you know, updated. I need to, you know, we were looking for this. Because we also are in contact with them for repairs and things like that. Like, we had an individual break their screen. Now, we were able to fix it through the program. So,
right.
as, you know, if you reach out to us, we'll be more than happy to see if the individual still qualifies for the program and take it from there. Because, yes, everybody's, and also their disabilities change. You know, their eyesight may get worse or, you know, something
right.
like that. So, we're more than willing to talk to the individual. Again, I try to look back at our files and contact individuals, but sometimes that doesn't always work because of other things that I'm doing. So,
okay.
But definitely a good thing to look back at individuals that have received in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, very good. Thank you, Muriel. Okay, we will move on to new business on community inclusion services through June 30th, 2020.
Hey, this is Brian, and I'll take this particular agenda item. As I'm certain folks would expect, the COVID-19 pandemic has radically altered the delivery of services across state government, and our bureau is certainly no exception in that regard. We have had to stop direct in-community services, and we've asked all of our third-party vendors to do the same or to demonstrate in advance what protocols they have to ensure the safety of our clients if the service is one that absolutely must proceed. Now, services that absolutely must proceed are services that are primarily in the, you know, emergency nature type of a service. We are otherwise providing services remotely through using technologies that are available to us. And in fact, one of the two Braille instructors who's contracted through the Deafblind Technology Fund has worked out a way of providing some Braille instruction in a remote way with a client that she is working with. But many of the plans that were well underway through CAN and through Oak Hill, which included field trips, needed to be curtailed, and unfortunately did not occur to date, and it does not appear likely that they would be able to proceed before the end of the fiscal year on June 30. Those of you who are following the governor's executive orders will have seen that phase two of the Reopen Connecticut plan will be resuming next week prior to the weekend. And then there is a phase three, which would be occurring at some point, I believe it's early July at this point. Obviously, as COVID-19 is an evolving pandemic, guidance changes in accordance to that. So it is very unlikely that I would be in a position to make any promises of how things will occur and when they will occur, because the actual pandemic is a fluid situation. So once we are told that we may resume close contact services, we would then proceed with providing close contact services. But for now, you will see, if you've looked at the executive order, where the governor has identified the types of close contact services that have resumed or may resume with the phase two rollout. And these services are not contained within that. Those are services that are not these one-on-one types of service delivery. So we are awaiting that change so that we could then safely, and I have to emphasize safely, resume either providing direct close contact services ourselves or authorizing third-party vendors to resume with the protocols that are required in place. So for our clients that are recipients of services through this grant, the only services we have been able to offer are those which can be done in a remote way where the provider of the service and the recipient of the service are not in physical contact with each other. We certainly recognize the incredible difficulty that this has resulted in, particularly for the clients that are served through these funds, but we are also required to follow the restrictions and the safety protocols that are in place so that we don't put people at risk or engage in behaviors that could promote the spread of the virus. So that is where we are at right now for the community inclusion services. And I would say that because of the question that Kathy Morgan raised, I think that this might be the better section of the agenda for me to address that. Certainly that could also have been addressed under budget updates, but as it stands right now, we do not know what the ultimate plan will be for unexpended funds across all of the funded line items at our budget. We do know that the impact of COVID-19 has been felt across every one of our program budgets, be it children's services or vocational rehabilitation or business enterprises. All of the budgets have been impacted. As an example, in the vocational rehabilitation program, the vendors are not providing services there either. So there are funds that are not being expended where there are requirements associated with spending certain levels of funding for federal requirements. So we are aware that the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted substantially in all of the program budgets, as it has impacted on other bureaus within the agency, because there are limited opportunities for services to be provided due to the social distancing restrictions that are in place. So I, unfortunately, to respond to Kathy's question, have to say that we do not yet know, in terms of the deficit for Connecticut that Andrew will be talking about, how line items are going to be impacted for the current year, whether these funds might in some way be made available to the vendors that were otherwise put in situations where they lost funding that they were anticipating receiving for the delivery of services. We just simply, at this moment, don't have answers for anybody. And I'm sorry, I know that is a difficult response to hear if you're a vendor who was in need of these funds in order to meet your expenses. But I just, sadly, as of this moment, I truly don't have additional information on how the unexpended funds are going to be treated for any of the appropriated line items for the agency. I'll pause.
This is Al. I'm sorry, Brian. I don't mean to interrupt, but is the agency at least in discussion with OPM about this situation? Because I'm sure BESBE is not, well, it wouldn't be BESBE, I guess it would be ADS, but I'm sure it's not the only agency who's concerned about being held harmless on its expenditures that it couldn't use because of circumstances beyond its control.
This is Brian. Yes, absolutely. The answer to that is yes. And our business manager has been asked to provide financial estimates of how much vendors across the various programs have lost as a result of not being able to provide services as a result of COVID-19. So that information has been requested of us, and it has been provided, and from there forwarded off to the Office of Policy and Management, along with, obviously, all of the other bureaus within Aging and Disability Services. I just, as of now, though, do not know what the outcome will be as a result of that information being provided, but it has been provided.
Thank you.
Brian, this is Sarah, the interpreter. I have two participants on Zoom who have questions.
Yes.
Okay.
Ron Thomas?
Hold on a moment.
Do you have a question?
Okay.
I'm sorry, did you say Ron?
Hold on, we have Lisa Flaherty-Vaughn has a question.
Okay.
Okay. Hi, Brian. This is Lisa. I have two things that I would like to add regarding the COVID issues within the deafblind community as well as the blind and hard of hearing community. Is it all right if I mention them now?
If it is related to the expenditure of these funds and these services, yes. Otherwise, if it's in general discussion around COVID-19, there is an agenda item coming up that we're going to have, I believe, a broader discussion around COVID-19 and issues that the deafblind community is experiencing. So I don't know what your question is, but I frame it in that way.
Okay. Then I think that I will hold off because they are two concerns that I have in regards to the COVID-19. So I will hold off on my comments until we reach that point in the agenda. Hang on one moment. I'm having a little trouble seeing the interpreter. Okay.
Okay, Brian.
Hold on. We have one more person on Zoom who has a comment. Hold on one moment, please. We're trying to get
this. I just want to make sure I have that individual's name as being in attendance.
Hold on. Lisa's having a little trouble with the interpreter. We're trying to make sure that she can see. We also have Jason, who is on Zoom, who has a comment. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, this is Lisa. I'm the Deafblind Associate of Connecticut president. And when COVID hit, it was very disconcerting for us. It was a bit traumatic because we lost all of our socialization at that point. People were talking about the safety and the social distancing. And it was very scary for us. They're now making some announcements about the openings. We're seeing announcements on TV. We have the interpreter and we have captioning, which is great for the deaf community, but for the deafblind community, it's not as successful. There's information that we are missing, that we are unable to receive because we are unable to see the interpreter on the TV or the captioning. Sometimes the transcript has too many words. It's very difficult to follow. It's incredibly overwhelming. And very often, those of us in the deafblind community were very detached and had a serious lack of understanding as a result of this. So I wanted to make some sort of proposal, maybe during the new business discussion. I think Bensie needs to hire somebody, or they need to have someone on staff who can provide this information, not as a transcript, but more as
more of an informational outline of what's important, what it is that we need to know. Not the full transcript of the governor's addresses, but just the main points, so that we need to know what we need to do to be safe, so that we can continue to be safe, because trying to read the transcripts of the governor's address and other information is very, very confusing. But we still need to have this information. So I would suggest if we could hire somebody or have a staff person who could do that, that would be incredibly helpful for those of us in the deafblind community. Also, in regards to the SSP, we need to have some sort of training about safety in regards to COVID. You know, who we can contact, how we can contact, what the social distancing requirements are, and how can we be safe. We still need our SSPs, but we need to remain safe with them. So those were my two comments. I wanted to make sure that I said those two things, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
This is Brian.
Comment, Jason, on Zoom as well. Go ahead, Brian.
This is Brian. Lisa, thank you for your recommendations. They're much appreciated.
And Brian, this is the interpreter, I believe. Yes, we have Jason. Jason Corning has a comment as well. Hi, this is Jason. And a couple, 3 weeks ago, I was in discussion with Lisa and Jesse. And my business is a consultant business about informational access. I am here in Maryland in the government office for the deaf and hard of hearing. And I am able to receive all of that news, and I'm able to provide a signed kind of a blog about the information that is being presented. So I don't know if maybe there's a mistake in the interpretation, but it's very important that the deafblind participants and deafblind citizens receive all of the information. And that's it, Brian.
This is Brian again. I am aware that Lisa Larry has been participating in the functional needs work group that Kathleen Sullivan from the agency is chairing, and Lisa's recommendations have been being forwarded to the statewide leadership coordination of the COVID-19 response. And I also will be, as we get into the agenda, giving Margie Santos an opportunity to speak and introduce herself. I do believe that some of these recommendations that are being made today by Lisa are things that we at BESBE could look toward implementing some additional strategies around, to be sure that if there are individuals that are served by BESBE who aren't fully either understanding what the information means that has been forwarded, or they're looking for some additional information beyond what has been forwarded and shared, then perhaps Margie could have some role in being of assistance on a one-to-one basis for those that are looking for additional information beyond what is being shared relatively routinely. And I also just want to add that I did forward out to the distribution list that I utilize, and everyone who's on the Deafblind Advisory Committee is on that distribution list. I forwarded the link so that folks could sign up for the governor's update. I had Jesse Mabry, who's one of our rehab technologists, confirm that it is accessible so that folks could sign up using their computer so that you could get those updates as quickly as they come out. And those updates are shorter summaries of the actual governor's executive orders and changes that are occurring as a result of COVID. So if folks are not yet signed up, I would encourage you to do that, because again, those are shortened summaries and any executive orders are attached. But I personally have found the summaries to be very helpful, because in a very short email, you're finding what the most recent updates are. So I would just offer up those two aspects in my response. The next agenda item, and then again, we do have a section for COVID-19 updates, but...
Brian?
Lisa's frozen on my screen.
I've been having difficulty with Kathleen Sullivan because she doesn't seem to have a full understanding about what deafblind persons need for accessibility, and I feel that I'm constantly having to explain and re-explain. So I really want to suggest very, very strongly that you contact Jason in regards to any information about accessibility for deafblind persons in Connecticut. He has the expertise. I would love to have him hired as a consultant for Connecticut for the deafblind needs, because he can teach Kathleen what it is that is needed. I mean, that's his business. That's what he does. He is a consultant. So I have to strongly recommend that you involve Jason in working with the deafblind individuals in Connecticut, because I don't want to have to re-explain and re-explain everything over and over and over. Jason has experience with this. He has experience working with a variety of governments throughout the U.S., and I have to recommend that he would be the best person to bring in to work as a consultant with Kathleen and for our needs in the deafblind community.
This is Brian. Thank you for that recommendation. In terms of contracting with fee-for-service vendors, that is a process that goes through our centralized contracting unit. So I wouldn't be able on this call to make a commitment as to what vendors might be in a position to be recipients of contracts from our state agency, but I certainly will look into the matter and will do some research on what his particular company offers. I believe the website information has been shared so that we can start by doing a review of the information that is on his website, and then I could subsequently have a discussion with the head of our fiscal area where the contracting unit exists. But that would be all I would be able to commit to here, because there is a very specific process by which vendors become contractors of the state of Connecticut.
And Brian, there is another hand raised in the Zoom room. Lisa Flaherty is saying thank you so much, and Sue Pedersen has her hand raised. Say good morning, Brian. This is Sue from
Canada.
I wanted to thank you for all of the information and feedback today. And when we were discussing the budget, I am obviously a vendor of you and of yours and on that list.
So, the interpreter is asking for clarification. My question is, I'm wondering what the deadline is for us to submit invoices to your agency as a vendor. Is it before June 30th? I'm sure other vendors need to know this too, but you know, working from the Communication Access Network, I would like to know when the deadline is for submitting invoices.
Typically, invoices received by June 12th. To be paid with current year funds, typically. Funds for the following year would be used to pay invoices received after that date. So it's not so much a matter of when you must have your last invoice in, because let us assume that perhaps some services occur during the month of June, but after June 12th. You may still bill in July for those services that you didn't bill for in June. So I would say you don't need to be concerned about receiving payment for the services that are rendered. It only becomes a matter of which fiscal year's funds they would be paid out of.
Brian?
Okay, thank you very much, Brian. I appreciate that information.
Is that Chris Lasser?
Yes. I would just ask.
Hold on one moment, please. We have the interpreter still working.